A quarter of Central Europe's population, gone. Not in a single catastrophic event, but ground down over 30 brutal years of religious warfare that left some regions with barely 40% of their original inhabitants. The survivors of the 30 Years' War gathered in 1648, exhausted and traumatized, to forge something unprecedented. A system where states with fundamentally different beliefs could coexist without annihilating each other. This wasn't idealism, it was survival. The Westphalian system they created gave us sovereign states, diplomatic immunity, and the radical idea that nations could disagree without resorting to total war. For centuries, this framework held. Today, as conflicts rage from Ukraine to Gaza, we're witnessing what happens when this carefully constructed order begins to fracture. The question isn't whether Kissinger's analysis matters, it's whether we'll heed its warnings before history repeats itself. The Westphalian system's genius wasn't creating peace, it was making war manageable. When Louis XIV's France threatened dominance, England, the Dutch Republic, and the Holy Roman Empire formed the Grand Alliance. When Frederick II seized Austria's Silesia in 1740, 7 years of warfare forced his acceptance into the Club of Major Powers. This wasn't morality, it was mechanics. What made this work transcended treaties. Europe's aristocratic diplomats spoke French, attended the same schools, and shared unspoken rules about honor. The Congress of Vienna in 1815 refined this further, introducing regular consultations that helped Europe avoid major wars for nearly a century. But destructive forces built beneath, nationalism challenging empires, industrialization making war deadlier, rigid alliances replacing flexibility. When Archduke Franz Ferdinand was assassinated in 1914, sophisticated consultation mechanisms collapsed within weeks. The catastrophe destroyed the European-centered world order itself. While Europe separated church from state, Islam developed a different worldview. Within a century of Muhammad's 632 death, Arab armies created a binary vision: Dar al-Islam, the realm of peace under Islamic law, and Dar al-Harb, the realm of war awaiting incorporation. This was a religious mission to bring divine order to humanity, not Western-style imperialism. The Ottoman Empire peaked with the 1683 Vienna siege. As it declined, European powers carved up its territories, imposing Westphalian nation-states onto a civilization organized differently. The 1920 Treaty of Sevres created Middle Eastern borders largely lacking historical roots. When Turkey abolished the caliphate in 1924, the Muslim world was stranded between Westphalian order and the now unrealizable Dar al-Islam. This identity crisis persists through two competing visions: pan-Arabists accepting state-based systems while seeking Arab unity, and political Islamists insisting religion must define modern Arab identity. For movements like Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and ISIS, the Westphalian system is fundamentally illegitimate, secular constructs dividing the Islamic community. This isn't terrorism seeking concessions, it's a competing vision of world order where purity, not stability, guides action. Iran's 1979 revolution created an unprecedented entity, a sophisticated nation with 2,500 years of civilization that rejected the entire Westphalian framework. This wasn't backwardness, it was a highly educated population choosing revolutionary ideology over pragmatic statecraft. Khomeini conceived the state as a weapon in religious struggle, declaring the Middle East's modern borders false and un-Islamic. Iran operates paradoxically, simultaneously claiming Westphalian rights while proclaiming its intention to replace that system. It maintains embassies and demands diplomatic respect while violating core principles like immunity, the 444-day hostage crisis. It insists on territorial sovereignty while supporting non-state actors like Hezbollah. The Revolutionary Guard functions both as state military and supporter of religious movements beyond Iran's borders. The nuclear issue transcends technical concerns to become a fundamental question about international order. As Khamenei stated, the Americans are enemies of the Islamic Revolution. Iran's missile program, cyber operations, and proxy networks serve both conventional state interests and revolutionary objectives, making Iran a test case for whether the international system can accommodate actors who reject its premises while exploiting its protections. Asia defies simple categorization. Until Western contact, no Asian language had a word for Asia. Its peoples never saw themselves as one continent. Unlike the West's shared Christian heritage, Asia features profound ethnic, linguistic, religious, and cultural differences. Yet, the Westphalian principle of sovereign states has largely prevailed, with post-colonial nations affirming each other's sovereignty. Traditional Asian powers operated differently. China saw itself as the center of all under heaven, with the emperor linking human and divine realms. World order reflected universal hierarchy, not competing equals. Japan's response to Western encroachment was decisive. The Meiji Emperor's 1868 reforms launched sweeping modernization, culminating in victories over China, 1894, and Russia, 1905. Today, two separate power balances are emerging in South and East Asia, neither possessing a balancer capable of establishing equilibrium. The U.S.-China relationship presents unique challenges. America operates far from the region's center while being Japan's ally and China's proclaimed partner. The question isn't whether Asia will adopt Western concepts wholesale, but whether it can develop a hybrid system accommodating both Westphalian sovereignty and traditional hierarchical relationships. No country has shaped contemporary world order more decisively than the United States. Yet, none has shown such ambivalence about participation. America expanded across a continent while denying imperial designs, influenced global events while disclaiming national interest, and became a superpower while disavowing power politics. This isn't hypocrisy, it's identity. Theodore Roosevelt envisioned America maintaining global peace through equilibrium, his speak softly and carry a big stick approach, emphasizing that humane values required geopolitical success. Woodrow Wilson transformed this into something far more ambitious, making the world safe for democracy by spreading American institutions globally. All 12 post-war American presidents have affirmed America's exceptional global role. This moral universalism produced extraordinary Cold War achievements, rebuilding European economies, creating NATO, establishing global security partnerships. Yet, as America encountered different historic views of world order, limits became apparent. The question facing America today is fundamental. What must we prevent, even alone? What should we pursue only with allies? What should we avoid, even if urged by alliances? Without answering these questions, American foreign policy oscillates between crusading idealism and isolationist withdrawal, neither sustainable in a world where power is diffusing and challenges are multiplying. We face a crossroads demanding courage. The international system confronts twin challenges: radical movements rejecting state structures and rising nations seeking roles the current order can't accommodate. The risk isn't major interstate war, but competing spheres: Westphalian systems versus radicalism, liberal democracies versus authoritarian capitalism, constantly testing each other through instantaneous communication. Technology accelerates these challenges. Nuclear proliferation spreads to unstable regions and potentially terrorist groups. Cyberspace has become strategically indispensable while outpacing doctrine. Critical infrastructure and military commands depend on networked systems vulnerable to attacks difficult to attribute. Like Westphalian delegates who overcame differences after devastating war, we must act before catastrophe engulfs us. Reconstructing international order requires establishing coherent regional orders that relate meaningfully to one another. No single country can achieve world order alone. Progress requires maintaining values while acquiring a global, structural, and juridical perspective. The delegates of 1648 didn't create peace because they loved each other. They created it because they'd experienced the alternative. We face a similar choice, but with weapons that make the 30 Years' War look like a skirmish. The question isn't whether we'll face disorder, it's whether we'll choose order before catastrophe forces our hand.